Welcome back to Occult Enthusiasms, where I, and from time to time some friends of mine, will come together to discuss different occult literature and give our takes on it. I'm your host, Logan, and for this episode, we're going to start with some news. We're going to take a quick look at some occult news that has popped up over the past month or so. First, there have been reports of ritual activity in the Redapalli and Tuvapalli villages of India, spotted early morning February 19th. There were Rangali designs found outside the entrance to a graveyard. Rangali is a form of art that originates from India, in which patterns are created on the floor or tabletop using powdered stone and flour. The purpose of Rangali goes beyond just decoration, but can also serve to protect the home as well as welcome deities. It was alleged that there may have also been prayers heard being performed after midnight. While the exact purpose of the ritual remains unknown, the use of Rangali, traditionally associated with welcoming deities and protecting homes, in such a location could send shivers down your spine. Could this be a malevolent act, a desperate plea for help, or something else entirely? Only time and perhaps further investigation will tell. Second up, a woman walking her dog in the Hudson Valley in New York claims that she encountered Bigfoot. Around 10 p.m., a young woman decided to take her German Shepherd for a walk. When they left their home, the dog froze with its tail between its legs. After hearing something breaking its way through the woods, she retreated back into her house. The next morning, she found oversized human-like tracks cutting through the fresh snow that led down to the creek. There's been no further details on this story. However, the local Bigfoot Society has picked it up and runs it on their Facebook page. And our last story today, while investigating an abandoned castle in Edinburgh, Scotland, a paranormal investigator was shouted at by a ghost when approaching a castle's dungeons. The investigator claimed the ghost shouted, "Get back!" when he approached, also claiming that he could hear several voices of both men and women within the castle walls. He added, "I explored it on my own, but I most definitely was not alone. I asked the question, are there any former owners of the castle here? I heard a male voice respond, yes." Claiming that overall there were many unexplained things during his investigation. I would say that being shouted at by a ghost is rather unexplainable. That's all for the occult news for this month. Remember, these are just reports and claims, so it is important to be discerning and approach them with a critical mind. If you have any interesting occult news you would like to share, feel free to reach out to us on social media. Now we're going to get back into our review of On the Inconstancy of Witches. We left off by completing the foreword and dedications from DeLong, and now we're going to start exploring the actual meat of the book. I want to quickly cover again the structure of the piece that we are reading. DeLong's work is broken up into 6 books, each with multiple discourses, with each discourse breaking down further into different related topics. We'll be starting off with what makes the most sense, Book 1. Book 1 consisting of 3 discourses. Discourse 1, On the Inconstancy of Demons. Discourse 2, How One Should Not Be Amazed, Since There Are Such Large Numbers of Evil Angels, That There Are So Many Magicians, Diviners, and Sorcerers, and Why Those of the Labord Region Are So Strongly Inclined and Run So Hard Towards These Abominations. And Discourse 3, Why There Are More Female Than Male Witches, and About a Certain Group of Women Who Are Considered Magie in the Labord Region, who are also called Benedicts. Discourse 1 consists of 5 topics. We'll be covering the first 2 in this episode. The first being the diverse forms and appearances that the demons assume in order to deceive mankind, and the second, how the devil attacks us, both secretly and openly, and incessantly pushes us towards evil in order better to make us one of his minions. So let's get into our first topic. The diverse forms and appearances that demons assume in order to deceive mankind. DeLong opens with the lines, "Man's despair, his fall into the abyss, his complete ruin, and his damnation, is the first goal and the principal objective of demons. There are many forms assumed by the devil and his minions. The snake, the lion, tigers, bears, dragons, hydras, huge panthers, monkeys, a small horsefly, dressed as a monk. Well, the devil dressed as a monk, not the small horsefly. A bull, a swan, an eagle, just to name a few. All of these, DeLong claims, have been forms taken by the devil and his demons to tempt his influence on man. DeLong's descriptions of the various forms taken by Satan and his demons are certainly intriguing and somewhat perplexing. It raises the question of why the devil chooses to appear in such diverse and sometimes seemingly harmless forms in order to tempt mankind. Perhaps it is a tactic to catch us all off guard and lure us into temptation in unexpected ways. Though the idea of the monkey and the eagle being used as vessels for demonic influence is certainly unconventional, though it could speak to the deceptive nature of Satan and his forces. DeLong attributes many older religious stories to the devil, for example, saying that the snake god of the Greeks and the Romans was actually Satan in disguise, which feels odd as the snake god in the Greeks was named Glycon and was that of home, family, and fertility. Doesn't seem like a very satanic feel to me. DeLong does go so far as to say that it was demons who tormented Hercules as a small horsefly, and that Satan took the shape of a serpent to attack Brutus's courage and cause him to kill Caesar. Now, apparently, there are ways to identify demons and evil angels. Demons will take on the forms of the most horrendous and vile animals. Evil angels will always walk in the shadows, and if Satan ever appears as a man, it's always with a defect, an extravagant disproportion, too white or too black, too red or too big, too small, and is always surrounded by rays of sunlight, which will ultimately cause him to be recognized. Now, to break away from my notes for a minute here, I find a little bit of this a bit contradictory. DeLonge states that demons and evil angels are trying to tempt us away with these disguises from what he would consider the righteous path. However, when he discusses how to identify demons and evil angels, he says that demons will always take the form of a horrendous animal. And while one might consider dragons and hydras horrendous animals, a swan, an eagle, a panther, a monkey, I don't find as horrendous. DeLonge says that evil angels will always walk in the shadow. Again, it conjures to mind images of shadowed beings beckoning you from an alleyway. And I don't see that as deceiving. I mean, if you're walking towards such a person, you most likely have some intent one way or the other with them. But I don't see it throwing you off of the righteous path. I don't see this as ways for Satan to pull you away. And maybe that's just ignorance on my part. But for as much as DeLonge writes about all these things, it just doesn't sound like it's doing what he's saying it's doing. And that could very well be that none of this is true. It could also be that I'm just not understanding it, or the translation didn't come through the way that it was intended. And most likely, I'm just not understanding it. But I don't feel that, at least in this description, DeLonge holds a particular line of reasoning that I think is solid in any way. That'll take us to our next topic. How the devil attacks us, both secretly and openly, incessantly pushing us toward evil in order to better make us one of his minions. The previous topic and this one are a bit short, but I want to make sure that these are digestible for anybody listening. Now, according to DeLonge, this part of the devil's plan is critical. He says that the devil is only subtle so much that he can put himself in our lives. Once the devil has stepped into our houses, he lowers his mask, reveals himself for what he is, and forces us to commit all kinds of heinous crimes, thus violating the laws of hospitality, going so far as to deprive a father of their love for their children. DeLonge specifically mentions the violation of hospitality and the disruption of parental love as consequences for demonic influences. This choice highlights the specific cultural and religious context. The importance of hospitality in many cultures, especially during DeLonge's time, was considered a sacred duty. DeLonge's statement could be interpreted as linking demonic influences to the violation of this important social norm, the corruption of parental love. Parental love, particularly towards children, is often seen as a pure and sacred bond. By emphasizing this disruption, DeLonge emphasizes the severity of the consequences attributed to this demonic influence. I think something DeLonge misses here, and hopefully is explored further in detail later in the book, is the idea of how Satan pushes himself into our lives. As DeLonge makes his way down to the Labourd region of France, he's already written these people off. He's claimed that 30,000 of them are already witches, and they're going to find out why as opposed to verify that they are. So as DeLonge is going down to Labourd, he has the mindset, I think, almost of Satan himself. He's not going down with intents of hospitality. He's not going down with intents to help, but more punish. While this section of the book is more about Satan and how he functions towards man, I think it gives a very interesting look into the mindset of DeLonge. It gives us an idea of what he thinks of these people and what they've done, or what he thinks they've done. DeLonge believes that all of these people have fallen for one of Satan's shapes. As we discussed last episode, DeLonge believes that mothers and fathers are offering up their children to Satan in black masses and unholy sacrifices. DeLonge also believes that Satan could convince Brutus to kill Caesar. So what could Satan convince these people to do? And in his mind, what is it okay to do in return to try to banish Satan from this region? And I think DeLonge approaching it with that mindset is incredibly dangerous. We already know that DeLonge killed upwards of 40 people in this region, possibly more depending on where you read. And when you look at how DeLonge frames Satan's entrance into our lives by disrupting this hospitality, coming into our homes and demanding these heinous acts from us, I don't see DeLonk's entrance into the Laborde region as that much different than what he suspects Satan of. As we continue to read through this, I'm very curious to see if DeLonk's mindset grows with this, if there's any likening of himself in that regard, but I do highly doubt it. With that being said, that finishes our episode of Occult Enthusiasms. We've covered some fascinating occult news, some ritualistic activities in India, to Bigfoot sightings in New York, and a paranormal encounter in Scotland. We'll continue to follow these stories and others and keep you updated on any developments that we find. So far, we've only scratched the surface on the inconstancy of witches. We've explored the structure of the book. We've analyzed the first topic. We've gone into the different forms that demons can take and what they are trying to do to us. DeLonk's claims are certainly interesting. It leaves us wondering, can we truly identify demons by their appearance? Are all these tales simply folklore? Could they have some grain of truth to them? What are your thoughts on DeLonk's perspective? Do you think demons and evil spirits actively deceive humans? Or are these stories metaphorical representations of our own internal struggles? We'd like to hear from you. If you want to reach out to us, you can at occultenthusiasms@gmail.com. And I hope you join us again next time.